Glory of human life perhaps lies in the quest for truth. In the possibility given to the human consciousness to explore what is truth, and the curse of humanity is in believing that one knows the truth. It is not only the scientist, but the philosopher, the truly religious person, the artist, the mystic, who are questing for truth, but in different ways. And this is civilization. But when the belief that one possesses the truth overshadows the mind, then we destroy instead of building civilization. He who knows that he does not know is said to be the wise one. We will this morning attempt to be a little wise by not pretending to know something about truth, but by exploring what we know and what we do not know. Perhaps the subject is of crucial importance in the lives of all of us, individually and collectively. Almost all of us, in practice, if not in theory, believe that we know certain things. But do we? Have we questioned what it is to know? Where lies the truth? What is, in fact, truth? Even with regard to ordinary, everyday happenings, there is uncertainty. The sun is setting. Is it really setting? Our senses say the sun is setting. And for long, in many parts of the world, people believed that the sun is setting because they saw it setting. Today, most people would say, yes, that's an appearance. It's not really setting. But most people, when they affirm that it is not setting in the sense that people believed it to be setting, do not know that it is not setting. How do we know it is not setting? We believe that there are people who know These people have been able to achieve various things at the practical level and have therefore increased their credibility. These people are able to study, make calculations and predictions. The predictions come true. Perhaps the modern gadgets increase our belief. We may be telephoning to somebody far away who says, yes, the sun is going down, I see it through my window. So the sun is setting over there. Various things make us believe that what appears to be the sun setting is something else. It's all a matter of inference, of reason, which is the truth that our eyes see, or the truth about which reason, inference speaks. Now there are more complicated questions than this. This is easily perhaps dealt with and disposed of. Most people believe that if they have problems, the problem of poverty, of professional difficulties, the problem between husband and wife, one generation and another, life becomes so knotted up, complicated. There are so many agonies of different kinds. So, we say if there are problems, it is misfortune. If one is in poor circumstances economically, it's bad fortune, bad karma. It's the same word. But is it? What is the truth? C.W. Leadbeater says that it is not so at all. Of course, it's a bit of a fashion to sort of denigrate Leadbeater, but people, wisdom may come from many different sources. I don't think we should push anyone away. But he said that it may not be good fortune to have wealth, comfortable circumstances, nor bad fortune to have the opposite. What is the truth about it? Is it true that it is misfortune when you look at the situation from a certain level, and it is not misfortune, maybe even good fortune, if you look at it from a different level? This brings us to the question of different levels of truth. You know, I never remember anything, so I'm no good at quotations. But the plant which is in sunny valleys is said to be not so strong. And from that point of view, Perhaps inner strength grows where there are difficulties and problems. And therefore it may be good fortune. If there is such a thing as fortune, is there good karma and bad karma or only karma? And it is the eye which sees it, depending on which spectacles it wears, that dubs it good or bad. This question cannot be solved theoretically, obviously, because theoretically it's possible to say that when I face difficulties, it is good. But actually, I behave as if it is an injustice which is imposed on me. So, is it then truth? It is, of course, not truth, because when my action does not correspond to what I affirm in words, then I belie myself. So where lies the truth? There are these two levels of truth. One says it is bad and the other says it is good. And I am somewhere in between. The Buddha, I am simplifying the thing, but there are many nowadays who are interested in Buddhism and they'll know what it is about. The Buddha taught of the Four Noble Truths. The existence of suffering through the ages in so many forms. The cause of suffering, it is not a causeless, meaningless process. The materialist may say it is like that. There is no meaning in it, no explanation to it. God is playing dice or whatever. And so there is no point in searching for a cause. But the Buddha taught there is a cause, you can find it out. And not only is there a cause, but an end can be put to that cause. You may not know where suffering began, but you can know how it comes into being and you can put an end to it. And there is a way to end all suffering. Everybody knows in this is the summarized form of the great teaching of the awakened one. But the esoteric tradition is that the Buddha taught, he spoke four times, but that will make it too complicated and it will take too long, so we won't go into that. So we will shorten it by coming back to the two levels of truth. Because one is the absolute, timeless truth, and the other is the relative. In the Secret Doctrine, HPB mentions that every time the consciousness rises to a new level of awareness or perception, I'm not using her words. She says more or less this. Then from that new level, you see that what was previously thought of as reality, truth, fact, whatever it is only Maya. It's not real. You see it in a different light. And the previous perception is recognized as a mere shadow. So, there are many levels of relative truth. Veil after veil will lift. But it's all relative. Therefore, we can call all that different levels of relative truth as one kind of truth. But there is the other, which nothing can erode, which does not decay with time, because it transcends time. It's absolute. And the Buddha, speaking, I believe, the fourth time, said, there is no suffering, there is no cause to suffering, there is no end to suffering, there is no way. Was the Buddha talking nonsense? At first it may appear like that. First he says there is suffering, etc. Then he says there is no suffering. Can we merely dismiss that as illogical, contradictory? Or was he speaking at the two different levels? To help people who could only look from those two levels. Perhaps those who could, even we can understand the other statement, there is no suffering, etc. Although we haven't become enlightened, come into touch with the absolute. So, which one is true? What is the truth? In one of the books about Krishna ji, the author, if I remember correctly, says that on being asked about reincarnation, Krishna ji replied, reincarnation is a fact, but it's not the truth. I'm depending on memory, so I may be wrong. But was that also an aberration, a piece of irrationality? Or are we missing something? There are so many difficulties in understanding life because life is complex, subtle, working at different levels. But we want to grasp it by pretending that it is simple, it is concrete, it can be put into black and white. With regard to the spiritual path, many great teachers have said or indicated that there is no such thing as achievement. This is very difficult for modern people who are educated into believing in achievement, in getting somewhere. But from the other point of view, which is not advocating inertia or laziness, from that other point of view, it is not achievement, it is non-achievement. It is the non-way. There is nothing to be got, everything to be shed. Is it possible to understand how it is, how there can be a way in which you don't progress, where there is nothing to reach or attain, but there is the necessity to remain absolutely still with what is. Yet there has to be the application of energy. There, it doesn't mean being, as we said, obtuse, lazy, static. Let us try to look at this particular question in one way. Achievement is what everybody is engaged in, including ourselves. And it is this achievement which brings about competition and therefore aggression. Obviously, everybody cannot be at the top. But if everybody wants to be at the top, be first in the race, there must be many who are injured. So, achievement is what produces violence. And in that competition, there is envy, callousness, egotism, of course, because who is to achieve? There must be a person who is achieving, who is in front of the others. So, all achievement is myself at work. Achievement is the sum of all the misery of life. And if we are achieving one more thing, something in the spiritual field, whatever you may call it. You are bringing the whole of that in, and therefore you are not out of anything. So in trying to be out, you are more deeply immersed in. I don't know whether it sounds too complicated, but it is completely logical. The more you are trying to attain, the more you are lost in darkness. So, achievement is not the way. What is necessary then is to shed all that is part of the egotistic nature. All those things which create conflict, envy, fear, disappointment, everything which is worldliness. Therefore, the Upanishad said, you cannot know the ultimate reality by going towards it, saying, I will reach, I will attain it. You can only discover it or let it come to you by saying, it is not that. It is not that. In her beautiful talk yesterday, Yanti mentioned this great statement, thou art that. But the lower mind, the mind caught in relative things, in the transient, can make that statement also into a problem. This may be the culmination of the egotistic movement, the achievement. I am Brahman. Thou art that. If you happen to me, my friend, well, I am willing to say, thou art that. But is there a thou in that? Can there be thou in that? Or is there only that? Can I say, I am that, or thou art that? Who is there to say it? These are all aspects of the truth that we have to examine. As we said, not in theory, because in theory, all the professors of Zen, of Vedanta, of mysticism, etc., will tell us so many things, but that doesn't leave us anywhere. Or it leaves us in the same situation as before. So it is not theory that we need. And there are so many other questions about life. Death is there death? What is the truth about death? And we say, I am happy. Am I really happy? What is the truth of happiness? Yesterday the question was asked about the theosophist. Is not the theosophist one who is examining this constantly in daily life? What is the truth of the many things that life brings? Am I taking too much for granted? I say, I am happy, yes, but am I really happy? What is happiness? And how can we know if, whether there is suffering? It's one of the, not one of the Buddha in his greatness said it is the great problem of humanity, suffering, its cause, its end, its way. But is it really so? Or does it appear so? I don't want to seem too complicated, but if you are in the world of shadows, we can think of Plato's cave. If we are in the world of shadows, the shadows appear real. We are also part of that shadow, of those shadows. But because it is the world of shadow, it is unreal. So does it exist at all? This is not being clever. It's a very, very deep question. And therefore, does suffering exist? And to penetrate deeper into the other levels of truth till one comes to the absolute light, what is needed? That is a very important question. Is it possible to engage in this quest, which is no quest because there is nothing to attain? How does one begin? Obviously, with what we started with, that is, not believing that we know, that what we see is the truth, even about small things. Is fact truth? I may be with somebody and I know certain things and I believe I know about that person. That person is Australian, is tall, lives in such and such a city, the hair is this color or that color, or even some more things. All those facts may be known to me. But if I believe that I know that person, I know the truth about that person, perhaps I'll never discover the truth. And that's true of myself also. This is one of the great problems, that each one thinks he knows himself or herself. I am this, I am that. I have obtained this such and such knowledge. I have certain virtues. I do have them. It's no use other people saying I don't, but I know I have them. And so on and so forth. We have so many concepts about ourselves. Whether it is the physical, the virtue, the knowledge, the whatever it is. But do we really know? And wisdom may consist in recognizing that what we see as the fact, perhaps we think it is the truth about myself, about a X, Y, or a whole people, about the sun setting. The scientist may say whatever he likes, but do I know the truth about the sun setting, which is a symbol of all this mysterious phenomenal world? Do I know the truth about it? Its meaning, the significance of it all? Should I conclude that I know? Should I believe in my knowledge of truth? I may say, I know a little bit, but do I know a little bit at all? Without offense to anybody, perhaps none of us knows anything at all. I think that is true. You needn't accept it because we are exploring it. But I think, including all the philosophers, the scientists, and most people, except the great sages, the illumined ones, we do not know anything at all. And to believe that we know even a corner of the truth is a great misfortune. Perhaps it is the one misfortune. So, the first requisite may be to not to believe in one's own perception of truth, but to keep the mind completely open, receptive, a clean life, an open mind. That phrase, an open mind, is full of meaning. We take it too lightly. Any stupid person can be open to opinions which are different. But opinions are neither here nor there. The opinion of even very intelligent people is only what they believe to be the truth, which is not the same thing as truth. It is what they perceive from their particular level for the time being, that's all. So, we needn't worry about that. The mind must be not only open to other opinions, that's too easy, but open in a completely different sense, in a deeper sense. And that is the beginning of wisdom, to know that one does not know. And be prepared, therefore, to learn, to look, to receive. It's a strange thing that when the mind does not seek to achieve, it receives a great deal. The other day somebody said that it is by giving that one receives. That's true also at the ordinary level. You give affection, attention, whatever you can give to others, and you receive a great deal. Life becomes the richer for it. But it is true at the deeper level also, that when you are not trying to go anywhere, get anything, achieve anything, but you are open, receptive, with a pure heart, living a clean life, then many things are received. And all those phrases are full of significance. A clean life is not just having a shower or two every day, but a life which is righteous, upright. It is the mind which is trying to achieve, which indulges in crookedness, which is evasive, contradictory. But a clean life means being complete rectitude inside. We cannot examine the meaning of all that these phrases convey, but we may stop with this, that we must explore this question of truth, for it is of primary importance in humanity. But explore it without wanting anything, without shutting out anything, with a steadiness, a stillness, which is not of merely of words, but of thought, of desire. There are something that people call the grand silence. We can't go into that. The grand silence is more than the silence of the tongue or of words. It is the silence of the egoless nature. And perhaps the Theosophical Society itself, if it became a body of seekers for the truth in the real sense, could be a magnificent instrument for the helping of the world.